Welcome to the Teradome, baby.
We swarm.
Welcome to the Teradome.
We swarm. Let them know.
We swarm, baby.
We swarm, baby. All day long.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another week and another episode of Tales from the Teradome. It's your boy Dan, man. What a week in Hokie Twitter. Or not even Hokie Twitter, but just the Hokieverse in general. There was a lot of, there was a lot of vitriol, a lot of despair, a lot of performative tweets from the congregation. It was a very Fuente-esque week, the transfer portal for Virginia Tech. We had a mass exodus, some important, some not so much. And then it all culminated with what I will call Black Friday, where we fired three members of the staff. Dees Gault, strength and conditioning. We fired Ron Crook, the offensive line coach, and we fired Chris Marv, our defensive coordinator. And I couldn't really find anybody I would rather talk about this with than the two people and maybe three people joining me today. I got Brian Siegel from Boundary Corner. You know him, frequent guest of the pod, and also frequent guest of the pod, Pete B. from Too Deep. Gentlemen.
What's up, dude?
What's going on? How we doing, Dan?
Hey, you know what? Normally when you fire coaches, I feel like it's an awful thing. And it means you failed at what you were trying to do. So that sucks. But I think in this case, the three firings were necessary and at the same time came at the end of a week where we needed some positive news, if that's what you want to call it. I feel like it was necessary changes were made, and despite everyone entering the portal, there was some relief from Hokie Nation that this coach, Brent Pry, was able to do something that the last coach wouldn't do. And I think that was our biggest fear, was if shit goes bad, is Brent Pry going to make the necessary call to change some things up? And we got our answer. How you guys feeling?
You nailed it there. We saw a head coach that fired his protege, for lack of a better term, because he wasn't getting it done, especially in key moments of the game. We're talking about second half of close games, final 2 minutes of close games.
Yeah, it had to really kill Brent Pry to fire Chris Marv, like, because that was his guy from Vandy and all that kind of stuff. And as much as you can say it had to happen, we needed accountability for this year, and we absolutely did. Like, someone has to fall on the sword for what happened this year on the field, because there was too many close losses and too many high expectations for us to go 6-6. But these are still human beings, and that's a tough firing, man. But it does show you that they're taking this serious. Like, Pry is taking this serious. This isn't, as Dan hinted at, a Fuente and Cornelson thing where it was never Cornelson's fault. That was never the thing that we had to do to change anything up. They made the move. It was a hard conversation, as Pry likes to talk about.
And it's good to show that they can have hard conversations relative to the staff, and it's not just a player coach situation, because up until this point, it had just been that player to coach, coach to player. These are the tough conversations that we need to have, whether it's guy having to get in the portal, whether it's guy being kind of asked to go in the portal. And we're finally seeing little self-evaluation of the staff, where they are, where their gaps are. I think that at the top of the totem pole, Pry still has to look at himself a little bit this offseason as far as what he did not do well. But I think he did a really good job of identifying where those other gaps are on the team. You look at probably the two worst position groups in terms of performance are going to be offensive line and linebacker this year overall. And you look at the way the defense overall played in the second half and crunch time in a lot of close games. And then you look at the conditioning of this team in those moments. And those are the things that he identified.
For sure.
Yeah. Man. I mean, he came out at the press conference and he said, and I'm paraphrasing, it's not a direct quote, but it is my responsibility to make sure that Virginia Tech get it to where it needs to go, and I had to make these changes in order to ensure that that happened, because right now we're falling short. And the Deej Gault thing, like, I think our strength went up from the previous regime, but I feel like our conditioning did not. And this is an audio only format, but like when I do these interviews, I do Zoom with these players and former players. And when you brought up the hunger drills or whatever, the fear was not in their face like it was when you talk to the former players about like the Mike Gentry offseason strength and conditioning, or even the Hilgart Colorados. Like, it just felt like they weren't as inspired or fearful to talk about the conditioning test. And then you hear that there's 100% pass rate in strength and conditioning, when, I mean, good, but like initially I don't think everybody should pass those things. It should be a lot harder than that.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of people talking about the strength and conditioning, and whether, again, if they got stronger, they got stronger. I don't know. But like at the end of these games, you see guys like waving to come out of the game. You're seeing us fail down the stretch. Something wasn't right. And it's, I thought that was the most encouraging firing. Like, yeah, neither side of the ball was great, and you could make a case to fire either coordinator after this year. I think you could point to special teams in some cases. The O-line play wasn't good. The linebacker play wasn't good. All that kind of stuff. But so much of our problems seemed like a bigger picture, like a mentality thing, not being ready to play, not being focused, not, you know, playing every down as hard as you possibly can. And so much of that comes from your strength and conditioning coach. They spend so much time with these guys. And that's why when they fired Gault, like, I hadn't heard any whispers about that. I didn't know they were looking to make a change of strength and conditioning, despite the fact that guys like Dwight, Billy Ray, Brian, like, people had been talking about us looking out of shape. But I hadn't heard any whispers on the boards or anything like that. And maybe that was just me. But when I saw the Gault thing, I have to be honest, like, I was excited about it, because I felt like we needed a change.
Yeah, I'm with that. And, you know, we had been kind of beating that drum a little bit. You know, Tally kind of started it. Yeah, I started looking at it a little bit closer. And I was like, yeah, that's definitely a concern that I have as well. And it was probably middle of the year, and Tally was really on that. And I know we had some, you know, separately had some conversations with Chris Lester, and, you know, he had mentioned that as being a concern of his as well. So, you know, there's a lot of things that were talked about from a conditioning standpoint. I think strength has improved, you know, especially relative to the Hilgart era here. But when it came to conditioning, Dan's right. The hunger drills, I think, were a big emphasis on competition and not necessarily a big emphasis on getting significantly better conditioned to last four quarters in a football game. And I think the competition piece of the puzzle is important, especially with that being probably a very big problem relative to the last regime that was here, that where there wasn't that focus on competition, where it wasn't about winning that down. But you've got to have all of the pieces to the puzzle to be successful, and you can't let conditioning fall by the wayside to lift up some other area. That's got to still be the key focus of your strength. I mean, it's in his damn title, strength and conditioning.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've been out of high school a long ass time now. Like, I'm a grown ass man, and like, I can still like remember the, oh shit, feeling I would get when my strength and conditioning coach in high school would walk in with his Gentry workout folded in his hand with his hat backwards, knowing I was about to be put through some hell, but it was going to be worth it. And I don't think these kids felt like what we're about to do is about to be worth it.
Let me ask you guys something kind of, this is more of just a fun thing, but like, my buddy Brett, who helps us out with Sons of Saturday stuff, he's like, I would prefer my strength coach to not look like me. I'd prefer him to look like more of a Hilgart type. Like, and that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but typically when you envision a strength coach, you envision him like this big burly dude with a super tight polo on. And Dwight Gault wasn't that. And it's kind of funny. Like, I prefer my strength coach not to look like me. And I think I have to agree with that.
Yeah. Or like Jared Ferguson is just a bowling ball of a man walking right, around.
Right. Yeah. Well, do you want to talk about Jared? And like that possibility, because that's something people are bantying about, like that he could be the guy.
I'm just going to say it. Jarrett Ferguson is the only internal hire that I will be okay with at with these position changes.
Yeah, I'm with that as well. If any of these positions are getting an internal hire, that's the one that I'm okay with. You've got someone that is a Gentry disciple. So I think he's going to bring that level of dog to that room. And, you know, you guys were talking about how you want your strength and conditioning guy. So back at Hamden, Sydney, the nickname for our strength and conditioning coach was Rommel. Anybody familiar with the Desert Fox?
I don't think I am.
So this is he was a German general during World War II.
Okay.
Was in the African campaign down there and was just notoriously a hard ass on everyone. And so our strength and conditioning coach had the nickname Rommel. If we saw Rommel come up, you know, we were about to do some fucking laps. We were about to run our ass off for a while. It was going to be a hard day. So that's kind of what I envision a strength and conditioning coach being, is someone that is going to get the most out of you in the weight room, on the conditioning field, whether it's indoor, outdoor, whatever it is. They're going to push you to your absolute limits, because in a game, you're going to get pushed to your absolute limits a lot of times.
You're envisioning like Full Metal Jacket. Like,
yes. Arlie Army out there just like bullying me around. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like your strength and conditioning coach, you should love him and respect him, but you should fear him.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. 1000%.
Well, let's get to the question that some people would be asking, including myself. If you do go down the hall and grab a coach, is there the fear like, well, they were here when the other guy was here and it didn't go so well, that guy got fired, so why should we hire the guy that was in the building when that stuff was happening? What, like, why do you like Ferguson is what I'm trying to get at.
Well, I guess for me, we all have bosses, right? And if you go to your boss and you have a better idea, or you think you have a better idea about how something should be, you can suggest it. You guys can talk about it, but at the end of the day, it's not your decision. Mm-hmm. So, like, he was there, and I've heard, like, they didn't see eye to eye on a lot of things. I don't know how true that is. But, like, yes, you're there in the building, and you're working with these kids, but at the same time, you're executing your boss's directive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree with that. I kind of wanted to just ask the question, because I know some people have it. And, for example, if we had hired Bud after Frank left, despite the fact that Bud was there the whole time, he would have run the team differently. It would have been a different animal, would have had a different attitude, different priorities. And so it's fine. As long as it's the right guy, it doesn't matter if he was here or not. We have to get it right this time. And so I know a lot of people like a Dwight, like Chris Lester, that was already mentioned, Dan, like a lot of people do believe in Ferg, and he was here for a long time under Gentry and then left and then came back. And so, yeah, I have faith it could work out. I just, you know, we'll see what they end up doing.
Yeah. I'm of the same mindset. I mean, when it's your show versus you being part of the show, it's a different thing. And I imagine having very much understanding what went on under Gentry's regime is going to definitely influence how Ferg would run a strength and conditioning program at Virginia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
And I was good with Gentry. I think if a modernized version of what Gentry ran at Virginia Tech would be an ideal fit for, I think, what we need to do going forward.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Essentially, it's what if you can get the same impact. I guess I'll use this as an example. When Justin Fuente came in 2016, he still had the Beamer roster that had been going 6-6, and he added refreshed it. Like, he brought in like some new concepts.
New message.
Yeah, he brought in some new concepts, new philosophies, and it excelled for a little while. So I'm hoping that if Ferg takes his ideas combined with what Gentry instilled in him, that we could get the same effect, but hopefully it sustains and lasts longer.
Yeah. No, I hear that, man. I was wondering, so we also hired, you know, fired our O-line coach and our DC, and there's been a little bit of talk, and I'm not trying to actually run this, Dan. I'm sorry, man, but I wanted to ask you guys.
Do your thing, man.
I wanted to bring up the DC thing because Tally, Brian's partner on Boundary Corner, was asking the questions about, like, well, we're getting rid of Marv, but what about Bowen? Or like, why is Marv the one that has to, take the blame? Why are we firing him instead of Bowen? And so I think that's a pretty valid question, because for the last 3 years, it's not like either side of the ball has lit it up. I mean, we've had good runs at various times, but why, Brian, why in your opinion was it Marv instead of Bowen?
To me, I think when you look at the problems late in games, which I think for me is the difference between this team being 9-3 and being 6-6, most of that falls in what the defense was or was not able to do in the second half of a lot of football games. You combine that with looking at which position groups are the most problematic on the team. And I think we've talked about, we identified offensive line and linebacker have had the biggest problems overall on this team. And then you look at recruiting, and Marv is a negative recruiter
Yes.
from an overall standpoint. So when we look at those three things, I mean, you get three X's on Marv's side of the coin there, whereas you maybe only get one or two on a Tyler Bowen, right? So that to me is the difference between the two. Now you don't necessarily have to like a whole lot of what Tyler Bowen did, but I think when you look at all those things together, what Bowen did, the complete picture is a lot better than what Chris Marv did.
Here's
That's interesting.
where it is for me, man. And I think you can do even just the eye test on signing day with the live stream. Like, Bowen was way more connected with the offensive recruits than it looked like. It felt like Cheetah and Adebi and JC were doing a lot of the heavy lifting, talking to these recruits, and even Gunnar Brewer. Like, and it also, like, Noah Chambers, Christian Evans, these guys all felt like they were still coming to Virginia Tech if Chris Marv wasn't here. But if Tyler Bowen had been fired, I don't think Keldon Ryan and AJ Brand were coming. Like, it felt like these recruits were way more tied to Tyler Bowen. And then you look at the season where he averaged 30 points a game. Like, if you're averaging 30 points a game, you should be winning a lot more games than just six. He had a backup quarterback and a backup running back versus Syracuse on the road in the dome. Went for over 400 yards of total offense. And then, like, you look, and this was the damning factor for me on Marv and Gault, thanks to Doug Bowman from 247. Rushing yards allowed in the first half to the second half, we go from 38th in the country to 77th. Rushing plays allowed over 10 yards, you go for tied 18th in the country in the first half to 77th in the second half. And then passing yards go from 22nd to 106, QB rating from 10 to 71st. And then the biggest jump is first downs allowed via pass play. You go from 9th in the country to 103rd. Like, the landslide.
Second halves were really bad, man. I mean, we
Yeah.
got killed in third quarters. Most people that follow this team knew that throughout the year, which made the UVA game so refreshing because we
Yeah.
kept it up and kept the hammer down on them. But in
Yeah.
general, it was a rough ride in second halves and third quarters at the end of games. We lost so many of those games at the end, not being able to bring Cam Ward down and none such. And it's not so much for me when Tally asked that question, it was like, listen, because of the linebacker thing linked with Marv, like, I didn't even really consider the recruiting when I'm thinking about it, because I'm just thinking scheme and what position are you coaching. But he had to go, but I also think, like, I wouldn't have been opposed to Bowen going too. I mean, he's had multiple quarterbacks. Both of them have gotten worse. I mean, Drone's got worse this year than he was prior. There's talk about him being hurt all year, and I get that. But at the end of the day, he's responsible for quarterbacks, and it got worse. He consistently showed an unwillingness to run the ball throughout the season. I know that we ended up having good rushing numbers. That's because Tootin's a man possessed and was incredible. But even in the Clemson game, we didn't give a single carry to a healthy running back against a team that the Citadel ran for 275 yards on. So there's plenty of blame to go around, and I think you could have made a case to fire both of them. But because of the recruiting, because he brings in these quarterbacks, that's great. Well, guess what? Now we're talking ourselves into a third Bowen quarterback. And no, it wasn't Grant Wells that was the problem. It wasn't Drones that was the problem. Pop's going to save us now because of Bowen. But maybe Bowen's the problem. And we'll find out next year if he does, in fact, play Pop and he has a third QB. if he can actually get a more consistent offense. And because we're blaming the offensive line problems on Crook, that's clear from the firing. We're not blaming them on Bowen. I think you could blame some of the offensive line problems on the scheme in general. I don't know what you guys think about that.
I'll address some of that. You can definitely blame some of the offensive line problems on the scheme in general, but
Facts.
I think there's two things that I'm going to look at here, and I was one of the people. I wouldn't say banging the drum for Crook, but I certainly was comfortable with the Crook hire given the situation we were in
Yeah, it was a bad
after
situation we got
Rudolph
put in.
left. I was comfortable with the hire that we made at the time given that situation. The thing that I think did Crook in was his inability to connect with players and his inability to get meaningful players in the building that could raise the ceiling of that offensive line group, especially when it came to pass pro. I think that's the thing that did him in. Because we could run the football. I think we had an offensive line that was built to run the football. We did not have a good offensive line when it came to 5 and 7 step drops. If you had to stay in the pocket and protect for 3 seconds while drone surveyed the field or whoever was behind center surveyed the field, we were not very good at that, especially against teams that could provide a significant pass rush. So that limits what you can call from an offensive standpoint. That also, I think there was an emphasis this year, at least at the beginning of the year, to give drones more straight drop opportunities. For good or ill, there was an emphasis at the beginning of the year to give drones more straight drop opportunities, and our offensive line was an absolute fucking liability in that standpoint.
Yes.
And it took, to me, Brian, it took too long to realize. Year one took too long to realize we were running the wrong offense. I don't know if people remember that, but probably even said it midway through that year. And we got significantly better at the end of year one. Beginning of year two, we all remember what happened there. Started the wrong quarterback, which some of that has to fall on the offensive coordinator. And we were running what seemed to be different offensive looks until drones took off in the Pitt game and we had a great end of the season. And then this year, we start with like dropping drones back, who's probably the best scrambling quarterback in the ACC coming into the year, and we're dropping him back. I understand you want your quarterback to develop, get better at passing, give the guy a chance to do some drops, but like it was recognizable early that wasn't the O-line strength and that we need to lean on the run game and lean on drones' strengths. And maybe if there was an injury to drones' foot, as has been suggested, and then his knee later in the year, the legs weren't there. And so you had to maybe rely more on the pass than you wanted to. But I just feel like every year with Bowen, we've seen these mistakes in terms of personnel and schematics, and it takes us too long to figure it out.
Yeah, I think Tyler Bowen felt an intense pressure to get Kyron Jones drafted. And I think Jones spent all offseason with Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders, and they sling it from the pocket. And
They're good passers,
I
yes.
think he came in and was like, "Hey man, like I want to do this thing for real." Like I think Bowen was going with what Kyron wanted a little like For the mo I think he really took it to heart that, hey, like, if I want to get drafted and I want to, I'm because Lamar Jackson was an amazing passer and he was an amazing runner, but he didn't beat the running back allegations till like 2 years ago. Like, people are rough on quarterbacks, mobile quarterbacks like that. And I'm not saying they're even in the same stratosphere because Lamar Jackson is one of one. And, but like, it just, and then it felt like with the O-line, the stubbornness to not bench Parker Clements. I think there was you had Xavier Chaplin come out and say, "Hey man, I'm leaving because I don't trust this guy to develop me." And then Braylon leaves. So you have all this happen within the week. Not to mention he makes $500,000 a year, Ron Crook. It's a lot of money. It just what the results weren't there in this part of the cost of doing business, brother. Like, sorry, but you gotta go. I thought Bowen, he does have some inconsistencies that he needs to figure out, but I do feel like with the ability to have as many coaches as you want now, but only 10 can recruit, you could possibly shuffle around. Maybe you move Stu to special teams, you put Bowen back on tight ends, and you hire a quarterback coach to who has experience as a quarterback coach to really work with these guys. But I thought there was enough positive with Bowen to outweigh, or at least giving him another year. Like, you know, Schley came in, he looked pretty good. Pop, they did wonders with him in the UVA
game.
Why
didn't he play over Schley? Like,
I get that, but
it's just there's always something that I can poke at with Tyler Bowen. Everyone's like, he scored enough points to win.
But was that a Pry decision or a Bowen decision?
I guess we were 50th in scoring with all of our offense back. Like, is that the best we can do with everybody coming back? Is 50th in scoring, 68th in yards per play? Like, people act like Bowen, like, was amazing on offense. Like, we had multiple quarters where we couldn't score at all in a lot of games. So all I'm saying is there is something to what Tally had said. Is that, like, why is it falling on Marv when we failed throughout these last 3 years with two coordinators that were learning on the job, which I understand you have to give guys a shot. And sometimes first-time coordinators take off. But these two gentlemen, they have not taken off. And if you want to lean on Bowen bringing in these quarterbacks, that's great. But how great is the recruiting if the quarterback gets worse in his second year every time? And we'll find out about Pop this year. But now that you're bringing in a new O-line coach and you're giving him his third quarterback to potentially work with this year, it is all on him. Like, if the offense is not good again, it is a Bowen problem because it's his third quarterback and his third O-line coach. So it's all on him this year. And I know Pry thinks the world of Tyler Bowen. He's now tripled down on the decision to make Tyler Bowen offensive coordinator. It's a triple down at this point. So I'm skeptical, but I am very happy to have seen some changes because they were necessary. We had to do these couple things.
So you guys brought up the Kyron down there with Cam and Shador, and the one clip that I'm reminded of that kind of feeds into this narrative of we're gonna turn Kyron into an NFL quarterback. Who remembers the video where they were talking about I was the only one that won the bowl game?
Yes.
And he was like, yeah, because you ran the ball 80 times or some shit, and they were like giving him shit about running the ball and running
on the beach.
Ball.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, all right, I wonder if that was kind of that played into some of what we saw there. And I get that's a different game. The weather was absolutely an impact. I don't think in a standard bowl game that you're running Kyron 25, 30 times like we did in that football game. But it definitely set a narrative that I think got pushed a lot, that you're only successful because of what you do with your legs or because of how strong you are when you run the football. And it's like we tried to like beat the narrative instead of just leaning into the strengths of what these players can do.
Yeah, I agree that, you know, that ribbing from your buddies and your cousin, like that could definitely play a role. And I will say, like, guys like Jalen Hurts, who started their career basically as a glorified running back, ended up being really good passers. Brian Randall was the same way. It took Brian Randall a full 4 years to become the ACC championship passer that he was. Guys develop. Like, got these running guys who run more in high school and that kind of thing, but have the cannon of an arm that Kyron does. Like, he can learn and he can get better. And I really hope he does in a year of full health. And it is very cool that we're both have them both. Like, did you guys think for a second that Pop and Kyron were both going to come back?
Absolutely not.
No.
Absolutely not. I thought at the start of the season, at the middle of the season, the end of the season, the same thing. I was like, one of these guys is not going to be back for one reason or another, whether it was Kyron completely blowing up and going to the NFL or whether it was, you know, Pop leaving because Kyron didn't quite get it done, but was good enough to keep the starting job. Mm-hmm. And so he was moving on. I didn't think we would get into a situation where both of those will be back at least through the spring. Right. I mean, we'll see if a spring competition ends up settling this, but we're not sure if Kyron at this point is even going to be fully healthy enough to make that a full competition at this point. The jury is still out on how much recovery time those injuries are going to need. So we'll see what that looks like. But I did not think that we were going to get both of these guys back. Even just a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
I thought Pop was leaving. Cause I said after the Vanderbilt game, like literally we were about to walk out of the stadium, I looked at my buddies and I said, you don't got to worry about Kyron leaving. I was like, he's got to come back. Like, it was that bad. I just remember, like, being like, what the – like, I was so shocked at what I had just seen. And then it was like my worst fears had been realized. And I had even come on boundary corner and I said, it doesn't matter if you can squat 650 pounds. If you can't stop the run, we're going to be in the same position. And Diego Pavia and them dudes did whatever the hell they wanted. And then Pop comes out against Duke. Looks pretty good, to be honest. I mean, he made some dumb mistakes, but he's inexperienced and he's young. Redshirt freshman. And then they brought him out versus UVA. And I don't know what the conversation was, but he just, like, the touch on the ball, he was able to hit the deep balls, minus like one or two, but they still looked good. The one to Quan Felton in the end zone looked like Quan. If he'd have just reached his arms out, he probably would have caught that thing. But that's a different conversation.
That's a story we've said a lot this year. But.
Yeah. It felt like he gave – I love him, but it felt like he gave up at the top of the routes a lot, and he never once gave up, tried to extend for a ball.
You're allowed to dive to catch a ball. You're allowed to dive. I don't know if –
Steven Gosnell broke a couple ribs doing that shit.
Yep.
But, like, my thing – Pop just looked like – and this is why hiring – or getting the like a quarterback coach in. Like, we tried the Bowen thing at quarterback coach. Like, we're like, yeah, let's give it a shot. But it's obvious, like, it is detrimental to the Virginia Tech Hokies' future success to get somebody in that not only can work with Kyron, who's coming back now, work with Pop, who has showed a lot of promise, and I don't know what promises and reassurances they made to him to keep him on this roster. But as far as I'm concerned, if he's not starting in 2025, he's the locked-in starter for 2026. Not to mention, you have Keldon Ryan from DeSoto High School in Texas coming in, and A.J. Brand, who both have very good raw skills and talent. It is vital and paramount to have somebody in that room to develop these kids into – because we could have a lot of success with these guys. We could have a lot of success with these guys.
I heard Gerard Evans somebody. Wants a job on the staff.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah,
man. Hey, bro. Like, call Emory and Henry or something. Like, start somewhere.
You got to get started somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I love Brian Chris. I mean, Hamden City legend, Brian Chris.
Yeah. I love him too.
But I don't know if he is the guy to just be the only technical coach.
Is that what's going on though? Because, you know, Tyler Bowen's the QB coach, but you're think like we've heard that Chris has a lot of role with these quarterbacks.
He's the guy that's coaching the technique, and he's the guy that's developing from a technique standpoint. And it sounds like Tyler Bowen is kind of more big picture. We've got a, you know, if any office fans out there, we've got a Michael Scott and Jim Halpert situation right now.
Co-managers.
Yeah. Co-managers. We've got I think Tyler Bowen is the Michael Scott, the big picture. And, you know, Brian Chris is handling the day-to-day like Jim Halpert.
There you go.
And I think that's something that if both of these guys were maybe a little bit more experienced, in both of their roles, I think that was something that could work a little better, but I don't think it's definitely not maximizing the development that we could get out of the position. And we'll see if it's going to be good enough going forward, or if they're going to make some sort of change like Dan suggested with Bowen moving back to tight ends and maybe a co-OC quarterback coach coming in a more full-time capacity.
Yeah. Do you think that's going to be like the Bowen thing or whatever? Like, there's supposed to be more shuffling potentially as like
shuffling was the word that he said it was. That's a good word for it.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
yeah. I think
Coach Pry,
Pry said shuffling was a good word for it.
I thought he said shuffling is not the word I would use.
I thought he said it was.
He said it was the word I would
whatever.
Use.
Whatever. Like, there could be some more changes coming to the staff, but it's just not in a firing sense.
Yeah,
like,
no one is getting fired or anything like that that's currently on the staff, but there could be guys having new roles within the staff. Whether that's Bowen focus, whether that's Stu Holt focus, or whether that's Pearson Prelo focus, I feel like those are probably the three names that we're thinking of the most right now. And maybe, you know, we'll see with someone like, you know, if we're looking at internal hires, I don't know if you promote into DB, Pearson takes a step back and that's where your DC hire is at the safety position. You know, if we're looking at the other side of the ball, I think we kind of know what the offensive side of the ball would look like if they're shuffling there. That would be my suggestion if you're doing something on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, like people have pushed back on me for this, but Bob Stoops doesn't have a job, and I know like it's been a while, but like 6 out of the 9 years he was a DC, they were in the top 25 in total defense
For
in the
who?
nation. He was at Mississippi State. He's been he was at Vanderbilt with Pry, and he was Vanderbilt's DC with Franklin, and then he left for, I don't think he went to Penn State. I don't know where he went from there, but like he was at Marshall this past year as their safeties, like DB guy, but he doesn't have a job. He's been calling. I don't know. I don't
It's been
really
a
have
name
a,
that's been out there. It's been
yeah.
out there. Now, my issue with Shoop is he has had a new job like every single year. Like
Yeah, he
every
has.
single year. Like if you look, it's 2020, 2021, 2022, 2023, and this year, all different schools. Now, some of them are big name schools, Michigan, Miami, Marshall most recently, but like in his past is Penn State, Tennessee. He's worked a lot of places, but he is the definition of a coaching nomad. And he hasn't been a DC in a couple years. And if it's at a power school, he hasn't been a DC since 2019. And so
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'm in love with the Shoop idea, but I know there's a relationship there with Pry.
Yeah. And also, like, I don't know. Like, if we were in a position to gamble on this again, Anthony Poindexter would be my top target, potentially, just because of the way he recruits. Like, he's been around Manny Diaz. He's been around Pry. I think he's been around several people. And he knows the footprint really well, but he's never really called plays, and I don't think that's gonna work this time around.
Yeah, that's my concern with AP is that you're getting somebody that knows the lay of the land. You're getting somebody that can recruit his ass off, can recruit the footprint very well, but you're still getting yourself into a similar situation that you already just got out of with Chris Marv, in that you're handing the keys to someone that hasn't had to call plays full time before coming to Virginia Tech. And I think that is the problem with that hire. And I think when we look at offensive line, do we want to go ahead and have the Todd Washington conversation right now? Can we go
Let's
ahead and
have it.
let's have that
There's a lot
conversation?
of yeah, because that's a person that our fan base has pointed to, multiple high profile people within the fan base, Twitterverse, whatever it may be, being like, Todd Washington, former Hokie, coached in the NFL, correct? Like he could be our O-line coach. What are your thoughts on that, Brian?
I want the next offensive line coach to be an absolute home run hire, and I do not think this is it. And this is no knock on what he's been able to do with his groups of guys historically, but I want someone that has recruited in at least the last decade on this staff. Because if we look at it, he hasn't had to recruit since 2010. Recruiting,
Long time
that
ago,
was
man.
the pivot point of even modern recruiting, let alone, in terms of building out,
Portal.
recruiting staffs and everything at that, let alone pre-transfer portal, pre-NIL. He hasn't seen that lay of the land. I know that college football in general is moving into a little bit more of a pro model, but I still don't think that he is equipped on that side of of things to be the guy that can go out there and bring in the best talent. He's great from a culture standpoint. I get that. I think he's good from a development standpoint, but there's way too many question marks from a recruiting and relationship standpoint that I'm just not sure about.
Do you think Vice would be, do you think they would probably even revisit that?
No,
No,
Me
no.
neither. Me neither.
He was one of our better O-line coaches. He recruited and brought in a bunch of guys that have like played in the NFL and whatnot.
Yeah. He
He
recruited well. He retained very poorly. And
retained
I
poorly.
don't know if that's a
Yeah.
sub, a counterpoint of everything else that was happening within the
Right.
program in
Some of the
general.
stylistic stuff too, Brian, like with Vice. We're just off topic because we're not bringing in Vice, but like he did a lot of, you want to talk about
My fault.
shuffling? Like there was a lot of shuffling with
A
what Vice did
lot.
on the O-line to the point that I think it pissed guys off and they left.
Yeah, absolutely. HUD in particular, I think,
Because
he
he
left
was a
solely
stud,
because of
man.
that.
Yeah, he was a stud.
Yeah, and Nestor went back to WVU.
Yeah. And I think, he created, he was a guy that I think was good at establishing the relationships during the recruiting process, but I think his style in the meeting rooms and the way he ran practice rubbed people the wrong way within his group. You know, if I'm beating the drum for someone, it's Marcus Johnson. I think he's a guy that's shown that he can develop and recruit. He also doesn't have a job right now, so it's a very convenient way to bring in a guy.
What's his history, Brian?
Most recently at Purdue, but he was deep in the conversations when we ultimately went with Crook. I think he was asking for a little bit more than we were willing to pay at the time.
I think we'll be willing to pay this time.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think we'll be willing to pay.
Well, then you got Gordon Lamas, I think his name is. He's the offensive coordinator, O-line coach at UConn. And, like, most of his dudes get fed to P4 programs or they go to the NFL. And, I mean, obviously.
UConn had a good year.
They did have a good year. I don't know if the O-line coach, like, being at a small school like that matters as much. As long as, like, I feel like your scheme and, like, the belief of the guys can buy in, like, that type of thing. But, like, if your dudes are going to P4 programs and still turning out well, like, I feel like that's solid. And then I guess the WVU guy, it seems to be a name as well.
Matt Moore?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what Pry would do. I feel like there's a lot of options, but I feel like it's the most important hire he's going to have to make.
I think those three are better names than Todd Washington.
Yeah, I agree with the Johnson one, too, because I've been hearing that, and I think that could be a solid addition. The funny thing about an O-line hire is that we can all look at where they've been and whatnot, but like the actual like technique and the style they run, like none of the average Joes know shit about that. And so I'm hoping it's someone with a high profile that, you know, has had success. But Ron Crook had success. Like he helped Cincinnati get to the playoff with his offensive line. Now, you will know about Ron Crook that he wasn't retained by Fickell. And what was that reason for? To the point that he had to end up at South Dakota State or whatever it was. And so maybe that should have been a red flag. I don't know. But we saw enough with the recruiting and the play on the field that it warranted replacement. And we do need to go with a little bit of a higher profile this time, in my opinion, as well. I wanted to double back on the Anthony Poindexter thing because you'll notice that down at UNC, they made a pretty splashy coaching hire in Bill Belichick. Over at West Virginia, they are going back, in time. They brought back Rich Rod.
Run it back with Rich Rod.
And people are excited about both of those hires. And I do think that Rich Rod back in West Virginia and Belichick down at UNC, it's going to create a lot of competition on the recruiting trail, a lot, especially in the first year bump type thing. Yep. And so bringing in a Poindexter, like that might be what we need to do.
Get you excited.
I think it gets people a little excited. Plus you get to stick it to UVA again. We already have Mines on staff.
And yeah.
The other thing, and to kind of push back on the being a first-time DC, because I too agree that we should be hiring an established defensive coordinator at Virginia Tech. It is the lifeblood of Hokies football, defense and special teams. That's what Beamer brought us. And we shouldn't be messing around with Jay Ham and Marv. As nice and as good of guys as they may be, we shouldn't have been messing around with them because they just don't have the experience. Poindexter, like, 2017 to 2020 at Purdue with Brohm as a co-DC, Penn State co-DC as well. That is significantly more, at least in title, than either of the last two guys had. And so, I don't know. And the level of play calling, I don't know. But he's been a co-DC since 2017. That is a significant amount of experience.
Yeah, he's been around Manny Diaz. And who's their other
Tom Allen. Co-DC?
Yeah, Tom Allen. They're in the playoff. Yeah, I mean, if you do this, I'm okay with it. Like, I would be excited, especially from the recruiting aspect. And, you know, I like that. I mean, this is where I have to, like, hone in my wanting to troll and laugh at our UVA friends by doing this. Like, it would be hilarious. But, like, it's a big gamble. But I think, like, if anybody knows him well enough, it would be Pride to know how big of a gamble it actually is. And if Bud's really gonna be around, like, I feel like, you know, pick his brain, like, it could And then you have coaches on staff who have called defenses like Sean Quinn. Like you could like lean on them a little bit. And Pry obviously knows how to call defense. He's done it. So like,
it's just it's totally different than Marv. Like people are going to say, oh, he's never Point Dexter's 48 years old. Marv was 32 when we hired him. Like he had never done anything really in the sport other than some lower level coaching position type stuff. Like this is light years different than Marv, and I'd be fully on board with it.
So let's look at it from this perspective, because you know a lot has been made of AP getting passed over for that role at Penn State, but let's look at who he's been passed over in favor of, right? So you had Manny Diaz come in, you know, following Pry's departure. You know, Manny Diaz has been a head coach at this point and a longtime defensive coordinator up before that. You've got now Tom Allen coming in behind him, who had, what, 8 or 9 really good years at Indiana as a defensive coordinator, associate head coach. Like, he's not getting passed over for up-and-comers. He's getting passed over for seasoned guys, guys that have been there, done that. So I don't think him getting passed over for that role is necessarily a knock. It's just that he doesn't have that experience. So I'm not going to knock him for getting passed over by those guys, but the only knock is that he hasn't had to be the guy to call it 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you feel like he's probably been taught how to call plays at this point, right? Like they would be grooming him for something. He's not just code DC for no reason.
Yeah. Exactly. I just feel like he could do the job. It is a risk though. Like if you wanted to be a little bit more sure of yourself, you go out and get a guy who just called plays last year. You go out and you get the NIU defensive coordinator who they had a tremendous defensive season. You go out and get someone that's done it. But he's been doing it at big time football for a while now. And you throw in his recruiting acumen, like, You're going to be up against stiff competition, as I just said, with some of these schools making hires. We need a little juice. I think that's a juicy hire.
Yeah.
I think it would certainly goose the recruiting side of things. So, I mean, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. You know, you talk about guys that, you know, with that Tom Allen group, like, you know, he was a head coach there, longtime DC. He had Kalen DeBoer on staff. So he had a bunch of guys on his staff that, you know, did really big things, you know, were Broyles finalists, ultimately went on to other places as head coaches. Obviously now, you know, one of those is down there in Alabama now. So, I mean, he's not someone that's getting passed over for positions by, you know, lightweight guys here or guys that are up and coming. So I think it would be a good way to get a good splash, especially from a recruiting perspective. You know, you thumb your nose at the team up the road, which is always fun. But I think we need to move beyond that and look at it from a big picture. And I think it does make some sense from a big picture standpoint, but it doesn't come without its risk. And like Dan alluded to, I think Pry probably knows what those risks are better than, you know, we do here speculating, because he's coached with it before.
Well, technically, and this is just Wikipedia, I have to go to Anthony's actually his bio, but like in 2021 he's listed as a co-DC with none other than our head coach, so they are very familiar with one another. If Pry felt it sucks because we just saw an example of like Pry felt like this is the right guy and it didn't work. But I just think like that age difference is, it means something. And the experience is so much more significant than Chris Marv.
Yeah. But
are there any other candidates you guys have been like, if you had your druthers, like, oh, let's go out and get this guy. And then let's not Nick Saban. I'm just saying like somebody that's out there that we could get as a DC. Like I've been looking into a little bit. There's been talk of the JMU guy, some other, you know, the old ECU coach, Houston, maybe. There's been various people. Shoop, obviously, we already talked about. Shit. But
Mike Houston, I wouldn't be terribly pissed about. He won a national championship at JMU. Mm-hmm. He's the reason, like, he set Cignetti up to win at JMU. Like, but like, my thing, I guess, is like, whoever you bring in, they're gonna have to be okay with you already have your position coaches in place. You know what I'm saying? Like, how much influence is he going to be able to have on his own guys? Because I don't see Pride being like, yeah, you want to get rid of JC and Cheetah? That's cool. Like, hell no. Like, that's not happening. You know what I'm saying? So, like, that's also a factor in it, right? What do you guys think?
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one, right? Because, what degree is this person going to want to build their own staff? And in a lot of ways, if we're talking about AP, I mean, that's where it kind of makes the most sense if we look at it from a will Pearson take a step back and go more into a, co-DB's coach, just, more of
Player
a
development.
player development type role, with AP coming in, and then you go out and you find yourself an inside linebackers coach. I don't want to necessarily say promote a DB, but that's potentially on the table if you bring in an AP.
Yeah, because he's coaching them for the bowl game.
Yeah. So that in that scenario, I would be a little bit more comfortable with an internal move. I would still probably rather get a more seasoned linebacker coach if we went that route, but I wouldn't have a problem with a DB getting a shot there in that scenario if you're bringing in an AP, especially with Pry still in staff there, as the head coach, being able to mold him a little bit, especially with Bud potentially playing a bigger role in the off the field aspects, can kind of help a DB move along there. But that would be a scenario where I could see things working out for us. But it's gonna really come down to, when we talk about the shuffling, how things get shuffled. And I don't want to just rearrange deck chairs here. I think we need to make significant strides forward in improving the staff, really on both sides of the ball, but particularly on defense, since we have the most work to do.
AP did call plays at UConn for 3 years before going to Purdue. So there's that. Just to put a bow on that. Where did else do you want to tackle, Dan?
Hey man, while we're bringing in advisors and we're talking about how important the O-line is, you know who doesn't have a job right now that would be a good advisor for us that's 66 years old? Kurt Newsom.
I know you're trolling right now, man.
Oh,
Well, that's one of our many O-line coaches that we've had since 2011, as Andy Bitter pointed out.
he was good though. I liked Kurt Newsom, but
French hated him. French really hated him.
No, I wouldn't really do that, but it's an interesting thing because, like you guys were saying, and like I had brought up about the own staff thing, like you come in, all right, buddy, like you were a co-DC AP, like Dex, we have staff already, we're just giving you the opportunity to call plays, do this and that. I mean, JC, he's been great, right? Especially with bringing people in
I mean,
like
he's done a
APR.
tremendous job in the portal and whatnot.
And then like you got Cheetah, whose unit has been good, like real good. And then Sean Quinn, like outside linebacker star or whatever, like arguably been the best linebacker spot the whole 3 years we've been here. Like, and he's a road dog. Like that dude is like recruiting his ass off. So like,
He
yeah, I
burns
don't.
miles and calories like nobody
Yeah,
else, baby. He's got the receipts from the restaurants to prove it, man.
Exactly. But like whatever they do, I feel like they're gonna have to do fairly swiftly, especially since the portal is open and rolling.
It's hard to get these transfer O linemen when you don't have an O line coach.
Yeah, I'm wondering if Bowen's doing the heavy lifting on that part of the recruiting right now. Him and Brent
Because we
Davis, I
had
would assume.
Mayberry on campus, right? The kid from Stanford. Am I
Yeah,
getting that
we had
name
him on
right?
campus before Crook was shown the door, if I
Right. So
recall
like,
correctly.
so how
So,
does that work, right? I don't know.
what were those like? Did Crook it basically know that he wasn't really able to be at the front of the room at that point? I mean, I would imagine that at least preliminarily those discussions had happened, even if they weren't necessarily put in
You would
red ink at
have to
that point.
think, right? Like, you can't show your new transfer dude like, oh yeah, this is the coach you'd be working under, and then fire that coach 2 days later. Like, that's you can't do that. So that couldn't have
Right.
happened.
Although the kid from Sam Houston State seemed to take issue with the Marr firing.
That is true. That is true.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know. So we know when the video came out with the Witt discussion, that was probably filmed some point earlier in that week, came out that Friday. Supposedly discussions were happening beginning of next week with Pry. So that puts us probably about with having those discussions 4 or 5 days before the firing notifications come down, somewhere Monday, Tuesday ahead of the Friday dump. And we get Friday dumps back to back weeks, of course. So that's always fun. And you know, it's going to be interesting to see what those discussions were like and how that works in the portal, because I think we've done, at least the last two cycles, have done a pretty good job of hitting the portal in ways that we had to, offensive line notwithstanding. And probably the spots that we've done the worst are in the two positions that we fired, right? So linebacker, we probably didn't do enough work.
Well, Brumfield was getting, I mean, we brought him in to be the starting Mike, and by the end of the season, like, that he was Jaden Keller. And the guys that were already here outplayed him. So yeah, that wasn't great.
So, and then offensive line, kind of same thing. We brought in Montanius Cunningham. He never quite cracked the starting rotation there. Was in the two deep.
Is that because of him, or is that because of Ron Kirk's stubborn inability to make a change? I guess we're going to find out.
Yeah. We're going to find out. And I think so. Cunningham was kind of a tweener, right? So he's a guy that can play guard, can play tackle. I don't know if, you know, we ever got to a point where we pulled the trigger enough on tackle. Like we almost were like, well, Parker's doing well enough in the run game. We're not going to pull him just because he's fucking awful at pass pro.
it was odd, Brian, because like Cunningham, he was a tweener, but he had long arms and he did play tackle for an entire season at a G5, but for an entire season, it was surprising he couldn't get on the field with the struggles we had.
And we had, you know, Ganim at the start of the year, you know, struggled a little bit, had some injury problems, wasn't necessarily as big a part of the rotation as the season went along there. And then you had, Schick getting back into the rotation. And you never really saw Cunningham really get any footing on the interior, but we didn't see him get a bunch of run, out wide either. So it's a really interesting thing to follow. And we'll see if he gets a little bit of a different run with whoever we end up hiring, this go around. And, I think the frustrating thing from an offensive line standpoint is now, you know, some of these veterans have now, you know, seen, you know, three offensive line coaches in their time here. They're about to see a fourth potentially. It gets to a point where it's a little frustrating because the expectations change when the coach changes. The way practice flows changes when the coach changes. Some of the techniques that are being taught are a little different, coach to coach. So there's an adaptation period that's going to take place as you're moving along. In high school, we had a different offensive line coach every year I played varsity football, and it was a challenge. And it wasn't until my senior year that, you know, our high school ended up sticking with a guy for 3 years in a row. He was the best coach we had, and he was the guy that stuck around. In college, we had a former Penn State All-American my first 2 years there, and he moved on to something different. We ended up getting a guy that played for us, was coaching us at that point. Different styles and things like that. But I mean, you could tell, you know, Coach Keith was, definitely brought in a lot more experience. I mean, he was a guy that was drafted by the Colts. I mean, he was a guy that really knew offensive line top to bottom, knew what it took to play that position at a high level, not just Division III, but at the highest level. So there's a big difference in, you know, when guys come in. So it's going to be interesting to see how these guys react to having, you know, a lot of these guys, their fourth offensive line coach in 5 years, and, you know, some of the younger guys already seeing two or three guys within their short period of time here. So kind of feel for those guys on that front, because those expectations change every time the staff does.
Yeah. So if you think about, like, if you can, I don't know what the status is with Xavier Chaplin and Braylon Moore, and if there's any possibility to bring them, rope them back in. But if you can, then you're looking at what? X, Leif, Braylon, Schick, or Cunningham and Johnny Garrett as your offensive line.
Did you say Brody?
And Brody Meadows is also there. Yeah. Like, I think potentially, like, potential-wise, that's a better – they have more talent than the current line that we had this past year, if that makes sense. At least I felt like they
higher
had
higher ceiling.
Yeah, higher ceiling, yeah. There's definitely a higher ceiling there. That's probably a better way to put it. And then I guess if you bring some guys in via the portal, but also another question is, like, we're talking about, like, who would want to come without an OC or O-line coach, but, like, how do you pick defensive players to come from the portal without a DC who would – I mean, they're going to want to pick – they're going to want to say in who we bring in, right?
Yeah, I think – I imagine that right now Pry knows who the DC is. I would bet on this day, which is Sunday the 15th or whatever, like, Pry knows who the DC is, and we just don't. And maybe they can, because they know that, that it's easier to say, like, you're going to be playing in the system and you'll be a perfect fit for so-and-so's thing. You're not probably telling the kids who it is because that would get out quickly. They would at least know what type of system they're going to run and things like that. The O-line stuff and the portal, Dan, like, oh, I might have to grab some guys. We need to grab like four guys. I mean, we have 11 on the roster for next year right now. 11. Yep. And that's, we play five at a time. So you need at least 15, at least.
Yeah. You've got a plan. You've got a plan. Absolutely. That X and Braylon are not coming back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even if you're still working.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. With
even
the
if you're still working to get
gone.
Them back, you've got a plan right now from a portal standpoint that those guys are not going to be back. And that means that you need at least one tackle, two interior guys, and then a couple other guys that, and those are, I think, frontline players. And then at least two other guys that you would consider rotational players.
You need a center.
Yeah.
We need a center is what we need.
You need a center, a guard, and a tackle at minimum just to have guys that you feel comfortable with starting. And then you probably need another two bodies that can be a rotational piece at some point, either this season or the following.
Are we bringing
back?
Home?
Yeah, I was about to ask the same question. Second team, all Sun Belt, Jack Holyfield coming back. I don't know. But we're at a very critical point in we're at a crossroads here with the Virginia Tech Hokies and Brent Pry and what future success may look like, because you're not in a position to rush the hires and fuck them up. And you're also not in a position to punt on the portal because you desperately need people that are going to contribute. So, like, I don't envy it.
It's a tough spot, as hard as it is getting offensive linemen now, we don't want to wait for that spring window to bring in any offensive line pieces. You need to get those guys in now, mainly because so few get in the portal after the spring, and it's usually not the best guys, right? So those aren't the guys that are top level. These are guys that lost jobs at other places and wanted a fresh start somewhere else heading into the fall.
And you need to make sure that you're nailing this stuff, because we discussed runs, failures in the portal. Like, we bring in two guys, Frady and Cunningham, and neither of them played. And so if you think about the washout rate too, you need four to get to 15. And then you probably need a fifth or sixth to like prevent the washout rate. So like, you need to get a lot of bodies, and you got to work fast, man. It's got to happen like right now. So I'm concerned about the O-line, because in year four of a head coach, you're hoping that your O-line is finally starting to hit that point, you know, that you're coming into form. And this is like the opposite. So it's a giant concern for me.
I will throw out there, we got Chance Fitzgerald just hit the transfer portal in the last 20 minutes. So Chance Fitzgerald.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And UVA just got Nebraska true freshman quarterback Daniel Kalen. And Devin Neal, DB from Louisville, supposedly. We don't care about them, but it's just the latest portal news.
Interesting. Chance was supposedly looking good, right? And like last spring, he was making some plays. I mean, not maybe as much as the freshman, but they were talking about him.
Yeah, I don't think that the fact that we haven't had a commitment yet. I'm not truly worried about that right now because we've seen how the staff has worked for three portals, and it's not always the fastest moving process, at least publicly. And then, like, all of a sudden, we'll have like a string of like four or five people just commit, and then they all announce at the same time. I think that's just kind of the way Pry likes to do it from like a perception standpoint, where it's like, oh, they got some motion going on. What's going on at Tech? Type of
Yeah.
deal. So yeah, I'm not really. And Chance
And they've had a lot
Fitzgerald,
of success too in the portal
I thought Fitz would be
overall.
great when he committed. Aiden Green seems to have been the one that took over. He's a different position in the wide receiver room, but he's obviously gotten the most cardio out there. Got to work on those drops. The target to drop ratio is alarming. So hopefully
Yeah,
that gets figured
it's
out.
higher than you want, and you know, but I think, you know, looking at it from Chance's perspective, he never cracked the two deep. We saw Brody and Wiggins show up on a two deep on a two deep depth chart this year, even though it was, you know, later in the year. So theoretically, he's already fourth on the depth chart at the start of spring practice,
With Micah and Snook coming in too.
with Micah, Snook, you know, other guys coming in. So
Stewie.
yeah,
hey, Luke
hey. He's
Stewie,
starting out
yeah.
at safe. I think he's starting at safety though.
Oh, really?
I think that's what they're gonna try it there and then see what happens. But and then
Is that
not to
a
mention
depth
Oh, Jaden Anderson
decision,
as well.
Jaden Anderson. Yeah.
Yeah,
So I
who's
mean,
yeah.
he's
Plus
a guy that could
transfers.
potentially still be, you know, at best he's going to be in the two deep starting in the spring. Now, whether that's something that, you know, he wanted to bet on himself and go out there and try to win a spot. I mean, that's what he could do. But you know, when you're already passed by guys younger than you, that's not a good sign for your future starting prospects.
Right.
And we've shown that, you know, just looking at the rotation that Fontel has, you don't get a ton of targets if you're not in that first group.
Yep. I'm rooting for Tucker to have a comeback season next year. I
Yeah.
like, I mean, you know how good he is on special teams. That's going to be great. But being the lone older receiver too, I'm hoping he gets a lot of opportunities to contribute because it was a bummer not having him. But let's be honest, he wouldn't have been out there that much anyway this year with all the other guys we had. So next year, Tucker will really get a chance to shine too.
Yeah, and I think
And we,
Tucker's kind of the forgotten man. I think like we,
yeah.
because he wasn't there the whole year, I think we kind of forget about where his spot is. And I mean, he's, yeah, I think he's definitely going to fit back in. We'll see how much run he gets on punt return, but he's kind
Better
of, I
be
think, going to
starting.
slide right back into that Gosnell type role that he
Yep.
had this year, but with a little bit more upside because of his speed.
Look, man, he was a playmaker and a difference maker at punt return. And we're going to need all the help we can get creating points next year as of this moment. So, as far as I'm concerned, he's the chiseled in punt return
For
starter
sure, for sure.
next year. But I mean, obviously, like, it's a long way till August, but like,
Dude, he was
when.
basically All-American caliber coming. Like, that's
Yeah.
what the magazines were projecting him. I think I saw him in at least one third team All-American punt returner. So, yeah, you got to put him there because he's a stud.
Yeah. Good things happen when he has the football and punt return for sure. Like,
Oh, yeah.
Jay Lane was good, but he just sees the field in a whole different way, it looks like, from back there.
And Tucker had a little bit more of that home run speed, where I think
Yeah.
a couple that Lane maybe broke a tackle or two that Tucker wouldn't have. Tucker definitely has that top end speed to just finish it, that Lane maybe didn't quite have there.
Well, yeah, dude. Well, fellas, I'm glad we hashed this out. It was good. It was good therapy.
It was fun. Yeah,
It
no,
was
so
good
we
to talk about it.
kind of like
Yeah.
an end of season state of the program, which I think might be coming up for your show, right, Brian?
Yeah, 12/27. So the Friday after Christmas, state of the program. It's going to be a spectacle as always. There will be drinks, there will be merriment, there will be shit talking. It's going to be a blast.
And it's before the bowl game. So like there's even going to be some bowl talk in there
Little
too, I
bowl
guess.
preview. Yeah, we get to get a little bowl preview in there. It's a little bit later than normal. Normally we go a little like a couple days before Christmas. The way schedules are working this year, we're going a couple days after. But it should be a blast.
Cool.
Yeah, dude, I'm a lot of changes on the horizon for our Hokies. A lot of chances for it to be extremely positive.
Yeah, there's opportunities, right? We don't know. There's a lot of things that we can point to and say this is a problem, but there are a lot of opportunities that could come from those problems. So we'll see how this staff handles it, how they navigate it. They've done a really good job in everything that isn't the regular season so far. So we'll see if they keep that trend up. And I think it's a good start with the moves that they made with the staff.
Yeah, we needed something. We couldn't just run it back.
No, hell no.
We needed to do something big, and this is a pretty big shakeup. Doing S&C, DC, and OL coach, like that's those are three pretty big shakeups.
The fact that Pry could sit or come and be like, "Hey, you know what? Screw this! Like, I gotta change. This falls on me. I have to do this because I made the promises to these people, to everyone, that I was gonna be the one to come in. And I was gonna change this thing." And he was, he made some appropriate changes. So we'll see what we saw what the outgoing looks like. I guess we'll see what the incoming looks like. And we'll go from there. We'll reassess.
Yes, sir.
And as always, baby, go Hokies.
Go Hokies.
Go Hokies.